Welcome to the 73rd episode of Does Your Favorite Movie Suck, where we revisit great movies from the 80s and 90s that actually might suck. My name is Kalen Egan.
My name is Travis Sintel.
You might remember us from the show episodes. Does Your Favorite Movie Suck, which we used to do.
It was fun.
When we had time. And here, you know, we got a little time. We found a little time. I mean, I think we said this on the last thing, but...
I mean, we didn't find time. We carved out time. Kalen was pretty... For being so loose for 2 months, he's like, this is the day. We need to do this.
Well, and I see it is, when the work is done, it's time for fun. And that's what this show is for you and I. It's a sweet reward, and that's the way I look at it.
Kalen's recently a father, in case you can't tell by his new... lilting joke tone.
I'm a father of a child who can't speak. Yeah. He's only two. That's not his problem. That's normal.
Let's get into it.
It's normal.
How is it normal?
Is it because I showed him
Trainspotting?
He's like, quit. I'm not.
He took a vow of silence after all the films you saw. You showed him.
So it's been we said this on the thing, and then I thought we should say again as a sort of like what we've been up to on the last episode. I mean that we released, which was weeks ago now.
But recorded months ago. So
yeah. This is the first actual episode.
This is the first time I feel rusty.
This is the first episode we've recorded. You're right, in like probably two and a half, mm-hmm. like 2 or 2.5 months. That's
a
nutty.
While.
I feel a little bad about it. I feel a little bad about it. On the last thing, I think I said, you know, I didn't apologize, and I mean we're just doing it again, but I do feel bad about it, and I would like to pick it up and keep it going as much as we possibly can. Here's why it hasn't been on so often is because I got a job writing for the show The Man in the High Castle, which I have produced, partly co-executive produced for the past two seasons, and now on season three I'm writing it too, and I went off and wrote it. And then they shot it. Now I'm given editing notes. Anyway, that's what's happening.
It's great.
And it's been very busy. And then Travis and I are doing all sorts of other stuff together as well. So
you'll note busier, more famous people still manage to produce weekly podcasts. And I just want to point out that sure, that happens, but that's other people.
Let me ask you this, though. Do those people have to watch a movie for every episode?
No. In Pete Holmes' defense, he does like a 3.5-hour podcast interview. It takes about as much time as we take. We get to sit and watch movies.
That's right. That's fair.
Listen, anyway, I'm happy to be here. I am happy that this podcast is coming back on this film, which is, if Kalen was like, we had a hard day at work today. It wasn't a hard day at work. We worked long hours today for us.
We worked a lot.
And we cracked some good things, and we had some good ideas today, and it was exciting.
Well, that's why I wanted to do it.
And wait, hold on. And if Kalen would have said, even aside from such a podcast, hey, you know what would be fun is to sit around and watch Evil Dead. I would have been like, I'm totally into that idea. Let's do it. This moment actually feels a lot like high school because it's a thing we would have done on a night like this. Got your homework done for the weekend. Let's go watch Evil Dead. That'll be so fun. And we'll hang out.
Evil Dead.
Yeah, watch The Evil Dead.
The Evil Dead.
Watch The Evil Dead.
Is that something you did in high school?
It
what a lovely transition.
Fact, it is, in fact, something I did in high school.
So tell me about that. Our show's about nostalgia.
There was a group of people in high school I was friends with, and we would watch, we call it B-Movie Friday is what we would do. But, you know, this would expand to other things too. And, I mean, The Evil Dead kind of counts in that genre, I would say. And this is one of the films we watched, and we would try to find movies like this because we all wanted to make movies, and we'd go get our cameras and make movies. And it was watching other people deal with gags and deal with stuff and low budget filmmaking was really fun for us.
We talked about that on a couple of episodes.
Yeah, we loved it.
That's, I mean, more than anything in the world. It's funny that you say that actually, because maybe this is what you're implying. Although for me, there's this sort of, I know I've talked about this in the past too, but the joy of watching people have fun making movies to me was always aspirational. I was like, not only did I enjoy that spirit, but I was always like, I want that to be me so bad. I cannot wait until that's me. And I'm sweating it in a old cabin with my friends throwing blood on each other.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
That's going to be heaven.
Which I did. I did a movie where we sat in a cabin and threw blood on each other, and it was not good. The movie was not good. Well, everyone got sick. Actually, here's a story. So wait, real quickly. We did this. My friend wrote this film, and we're like, yeah, we're all going to do this.
What was it called?
I don't remember, but it had vampires in it. And it was mostly the cast of this Rocky Horror Picture Show cast I was in. and we're, like, this guy wrote it, and he's got some little bit of money for it, and we're gonna go film this thing. And it was woefully cold, and no, it was Louisiana, so no one expected that. So it was the weekend, the shoot weekends we had, like 3 weekends or something. Two of them were piss cold, like really uncomfortably cold. So they brought in some heaters. And I remember standing over a heater, and I did not know that polyester melts. I had some polyester dress pants that melted to my body, and it was really uncomfortable. Like, it really burned my skin.
It,
like,
burned.
Yeah, it burned my skin, holy and then God. It became this, like, solid piece of pant on my leg. And then everyone got deathly ill. Like, after the second weekend of shooting, everyone had a massive cold and was, like, flu-ish, and it was really bad. Like, everyone fell apart. So that was my big cabin in the woods, like, fun filming experience. But around that year, I watched The Evil Dead.
Right. And so, and did it, was the ambition, I mean, what were you, like, 17?
Yeah, probably. No, I was probably 18.
You were 18?
Yeah.
Is it wasn't still in high school?
Yeah.
Got it. And was the ambition to break out like Evil Dead?
No, or the just ambition to was around? To make a movie. Right. Like, that was the full, I mean, to me and to my friends, the writer-director, I'm sure, had larger, loftier goals. But for us, it was like, that'll be so fun. That's, if we have fun, mission accomplished.
And it made, did you make a movie?
I don't think it ever got finished.
Oh.
Well, everyone got sick, and I don't know, I don't remember if we even finished it, because it was 2 weekends, and like the second weekend, everyone was deathly ill.
Yeah, right.
That being said, I was driving here this morning, knowing we might do this. And this will be a great sweet spot, not seen maybe since Toxic Avenger, in terms of, like, pure creative, low-budget filmmaking. I don't think we got that in Boondock Saints the way I wanted it to be.
Right.
So this may be a nice revisit.
But no, that's something, I mean, when we pulled it, that was many, all low those many months ago, I thought that would be something exciting for me to talk about, because it meant more to me as a kid, certainly, than Toxic Avenger. I think I said when we did that episode, definitely. I wasn't really Troma. I saw a couple of them, but I wasn't really into Troma. I was very, very into what Sam Raimi was, because Sam Raimi was one step removed from Coen Brothers, you know, and all that sort of, what felt like this kind of exploding 90s indie scene that I was so obsessed with. And so Evil Dead was kind of part of that to me, and it also seemed so accessible. And, you know, I probably saw Evil Dead after I saw Evil Dead 2, mm-hmm. I probably saw after I saw Army of Darkness.
I think for me it was Evil Dead 2, Army of Darkness, The Evil Dead.
Really?
I think that's the order.
Really?
I think so.
Because Army of Darkness, I remember I was old enough to be aware that they were showing, like it came out in theaters. And I knew that fucking weird movie, Army of Darkness, came out in theaters. And I think I must have seen it on VHS after that. And only as I got, and that was like, I don't know, 93 or something, 92. And so only as I got a little older was I intrigued to find Evil Dead 2, this, like, horror classic, which obviously led to Evil Dead. So I think it was totally reversed. Yeah. But Evil Dead became this point of fascination because it was the road that leads to Evil Dead 2, leads to Army of Darkness, leads to Simple Plan, which I actually loved. I mean, like, Raimi starting to become legitimate indie film artist at that time, way before Spider-Man. I was like, that's such a fucking awesome trajectory. And so I saw it in some ways, I think, probably as kind of a blueprint of how do you do this? How do you have fun with your friends and turn that into a viable, awesome filmmaking career?
Yeah.
And then later on, my relationship to Evil Dead continued, only in that in college we had this big, like, that was the era where we most deified Bruce Campbell.
Yeah.
And the world most deified Bruce Campbell. And so I was working in a movie theater, and he came to the movie theater to screen, to do a Q&A at a screening of, I think, Evil Dead 2. It was Army of Darkness. He was doing a screening of Army of Darkness, and he did a big Q&A, and it was thrilling.
That sounds amazing. I mean, the reason I think I got to the Evil Dead 2 first was, before Rocky Horror, they'd obviously screen old trailers from old movies. They'd just find old horror movies. So Elvira was like a staple, like Elvira trailers and stuff would come up. But I think they would, I don't think they really, no, they, you know what they did start in the later stretch of Rocky Horror, screening Army of Darkness, you know, boomstick trailers and stuff like that.
Right.
But I think they started off with The Evil Dead 2. And then we were, like, intrigued by the concept of the first one. Someone's like, you know, there was a first one and it was, like, low budget and all that stuff. Did you...
Wait a minute.
Yes.
So you came to Evil Dead. See, what's weird, I mean, let's just talk about the series real fast.
Sure.
I mean, people know this, but what starts out as attempting to be just a straight-up legitimate horror movie turns into splatter comedy, slapstick, splatstick horror film, turns into adventure comedy film.
Mm-hmm.
And so this very crazy trajectory. And to me, the sort of reversal of, you have to, like, there's something very funny about this series starting as something serious
mm-hmm.
and not, it doesn't deconstruct itself. It just completely switches genre. And I don't know what I felt about that, but I'm excited now to sort of go back and see, well, what was this? What, you know what I want to look at, honestly?
I don't.
What did they think they were, what did they hope for from this film?
Yeah, and I am excited about that. I am excited about
take
that.
Take away everything about their career going forward. What did they want this movie to be? Because I remember at the time, Stephen King, you know, put out some big, basically what made this movie is that Stephen King saw it somehow and said, this is the best horror movie made in the last 10 years or some crazy thing that like lit their world on fire.
You would know this and I wouldn't. You mentioned this earlier. The Coen brothers, one of the Coens edited parts of this film, right?
Or is that I don't know that. But I know that, I mean, they were all...
They're friends. I know that.
Yeah.
But I'm fairly certain, and it may not be this film, we should look it up, but Evil Dead 2 maybe. But I think the Evil Dead, I think Joel Coen edited it or most of it or something.
Like credited?
Maybe. I don't know. I remember like when I was young, I didn't look this up. I should have looked it up before I came. But I think that maybe Ethan Coen did it. But anyway, there's some version of that. They were like together on this project a little bit in post, like trying to sort it out, you know, and what it meant to be a filmmaker and what it meant to cut a scene together and how that worked. And
well, I believe that immediately after this, like the film after this, pre-Evil Dead 2, is the one that Raimi and the Coens specifically collaborated on called Crime Wave, which I think Sam Raimi directed.
Okay.
And they co-wrote.
We'll do a little research before we come back. That'll be helpful. We'll but I am interested in terms of what they were doing at the time, what they thought they were doing. I know this is famously a very hard shoot.
Well, they're doing Night of the Living Dead.
Yes.
I mean, that's basically what they think they're doing with a more kind of anarchic sense of camera movement. That's like in my head, that's what this was supposed to be.
Yes, but and I know the stories about Sam Raimi, like having these ideas for shots, and the crew was like, what are you talking about? What's this Dutch angle thing you're doing? And what are we doing? Right. This, you know, these movements you want to do. And they'd work that out, and that was part of it. But I also think, and again, memory really fails me. I haven't seen this since high school. But I remember this being imbued. Again, this is tinted and tinged by Evil Dead 2. But I remember it being imbued with a sense of, like, not eye winks, but, like, fun. That Night of the Living Dead is not fun. It's serious and it's doing a thing and it's fun to watch.
Right.
But I seem to remember this seemingly being fun to sort of shoot.
Well,
it felt
is.
Like.
Let's see. And let's see. I really want to look at what's intentional and what isn't. I mean, you know, we would be... I think that we should say in advance, we know there's tree rape. And we know that we're going to get into something that's a little bit controversial or just straight up bad taste. Yeah. I can't tell you right now if I remember that in the film as being played for straight horror or played for some kind of sick laugh. Like, I don't remember the tone of certain things in this film.
My memory is sick laughs. And I think let's take a second to just touch on where we are in culture right now, because we've been on this for a little bit since we watched Revenge of the Nerds and maybe a little bit before that, but obviously, the Weinstein allegations have come out, and all this sort of massive, you know, movement is happening in our culture, which is long overdue and you know, fantastic in all its ways and also terrible simultaneously. But there's a lot of articles coming out now about the 80s and film and what kids were being shown and what the tastemakers of Hollywood were okaying and thinking were okay to put out. And it's something we've been thinking about, but to see it crystallize in print and having like thought pieces and think pieces and op-eds and stuff written about it has been interesting.
In the time since, I mean, literally since we recorded the last episode, not just Weinstein, not just the Amazon guy, not just today was James Toback. Yeah. Like, they're just starting to come out, all these kind of old guard monsters. But before that, what I actually wanted to talk about when we did the intro, the kind of extra intro to Rocky V, is the geek culture being rife with this, being sort of full of predatory abuse or just abuse of power or opportunism, whatever, where, you know, the critic Devin Faraci went down a long time ago and then resurfaced and went down again. That started to shake the foundation of Alamo Drafthouse. This thing in LA, the Cine Family, the heads of that thing went down. And these were people who self-professed as film geeks who seemed to have been steeped in the films of, let's say, the 80s, like the mid to early to mid to late 80s. That's kind of the genre sweet spot of this kind of film geek culture movement. And I think it's not incidental that the films of the 80s are full of subtle and often not subtle at all misogyny and in, like, you know, instructions of yeah. abuse.
The most sort of the most startling thing about our podcast has been the fluidity and conversancy that the culture seemed to have with homophobia, bigotry, and like serious gender issues and sexuality issues in ways, of course, you don't clock as a kid, and of course your memory doesn't clock because you remember anthropomorphized robots.
Nobody clocked it. I mean, we talked about the reason I brought this up in the last intro was because thinking specifically about Revenge of the Nerds, I was like, you remember when we did that? Like, that wasn't really a subject of conversation. Nobody flagged that movie as being, and I've talked about it since, you know, with everybody I bring up Revenge of the Nerds. Like, have you seen Revenge of the Nerds? Of course. Nobody remembers that it is, has a rape in it. Like a very blatant rape. Yeah. Not even like a subtle one. Like
it's
a,
the climax of the film.
It's a straight up rape.
It's a plot point. Yeah.
And it's a fantasy fulfillment because of course she goes for it. So it seems to be this sort of set of, anyway, we're getting far away from Evil Dead.
No, but I think it's relevant. I think it's relevant in terms of what the 80s do in terms of, in the classic sense of the word, objectification, that a lot of times the female is the thing to be gotten because a lot of the people making films and greenlighting films at the time saw themselves as maybe the oppressed, quote unquote, or whatever. They thought that they weren't the cool guys in the room, and they're making these films that sort of speak to that and speak to that culture and speak to that experience, and they were successful because a lot of the audience felt the same way. They're like, I'm a nerd, and you know, I want to get a girl or whatever.
Well, and maybe a way to make this more applicable is, you know, abuse of girls is fundamental to the horror genre. I mean, it seems to be sort of a wellspring of traditional horror. And Evil Dead's no different. I mean, except for the fact that this movie is a little bit subversive in that, curiously, and I think people have commented on this, the final girl is Bruce Campbell. Mm-hmm. The guy who survives is Ash, is this dude who you don't really see coming. And as I recall in the film, he's just one of an array of randos. And he just happens to be that they picked him to carry to the end. The remake, which we should also talk about mm-hmm. when we get into the back half of this, of course, reverses that and turns that again into a final girl she goes through the gauntlet, comes out soaked in blood, but she's the survivor. And so strangely, it kind of returns to a more traditional approach. Anyway, all to say, excited to watch it. I do think that despite how serious the moment of our culture is, this will be very fun, and I hope to treat it that way. And mostly, I want to look at it as a filmmaking thing. You know, I haven't seen this since I was a kid. So.
Yeah, I'm excited. Let's
I'm go looking over there, by the way. Look at this box. You see that fucking box on the top left shelf over there? The one that's all torn to pieces? That is the Evil Dead.
Yeah.
It's because, and it looks so much more like the actual, it's this special edition they put out on DVD. Which was the Book of the Dead edition.
The Necronomicon.
But, of course, they made it. This is, like, so telling about DVDs and physical media. They made it in this horrible foam latex. Actually, can I tell you a story about that copy of Evil Dead?
I mean, I suppose so. We're here, so I think there's no better time.
This may be the last time I watched Evil Dead.
Okay.
So, you know this about me, I think. But maybe you don't know it in this level of detail. In Santa Cruz... I'm about to admit to a crime.
Oh, okay. Well, I was bored and now I'm not bored. So that's good. I'm gonna sit up here. Hold on. My foot is completely asleep.
My friend. yawning in my face again.
Yeah. No, I'm into this. I'm into you committing crimes because usually it's the other way around.
So we were in Santa Cruz. My friends and I, we were big film fans. There was a Borders back when Borders existed.
Yeah.
And we realized eventually after going in there daily and blowing all our cash on DVDs, like, we can't afford to keep buying fucking DVDs, but we want to see all this stuff. This was when I was in, you know, I became convinced as a young man in college that everybody my age would be a film genius because they all had access to DVDs, and DVDs told you how a movie was made. It gave you personal insight into the filmmaker. It was this fucking film school on the shelves, right? Yeah. So I became obsessed with collecting DVDs because I wanted to know how every movie was made. So we figured we can't afford this.
I thought everybody would be good at video games. For the same reason. But go on.
Turns out, by the way, spoiler, nobody knows anything about movies in LA.
Or no one's good at video games.
So we went in here. We were like, well, we can't afford this. Can we steal this? Can we start stealing movies? And we figured out this that we became obsessed with pulling a heist on Borders. My friends at fucking 18 and a half, 19, whatever.
That's way old, by the way.
I know. Didn't have enough money.
That's not like, we're just some crazy kids. That's 12. 18, 19 is your grown man trying to steal DVDs from a fucking bookstore. Go on.
Just wait. So, I mean, this story could go on forever, but I'll keep it short. The first time we decided to pull the heist, we had this whole elaborate thing where some. We'd go in there. We'd all sort of.
Story already makes me sad.
We'd all select. But the thing is, the movies we were stealing were like Fellini's
this
Eight
is
and a Half.
So sad. So,
and we would like put the. So we put them all. We figured out that it was once in a while we'd buy a record at a store and it would set off the alarm.
Yeah.
And we were like, oh, well, that's an excellent cover. Because if you're coming in and you set off the alarm, surely somebody could be going out at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody would be the wiser. Because this is a very typical thing. People walk in, set off the store alarm. So we pack, we put stuff in our bag. And a couple of us were going to be the fucking the ringers who mm-hmm. walk in. So apparently look around befuddled that they've just apparently set off an alarm. Meanwhile, somebody else walks right out.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you who that other person is, and I don't care if he's mad that I'm putting his name out because he was a guest on this show. The man who actually carried the merchandise out that door.
Whoa. Are you going to do this right now? Are you going to put him on blast publicly yeah. for a not felony?
I'll save that. I put in that copy of Evil Dead. That was the first thing I stole because I thought that was a special edition thing in a special face box.
Nerdy
and I
story.
Wanted it. And then somebody else, I don't know, they stole the Decalogue or something like
that.
Yeah. A bunch of other stuff. And it fucking worked. It worked so well that we then did it 1,000 times, million times. And that Borders, I mean, if you're wondering why Borders eventually closed.
Yeah. Well, it's because the mastermind fucking crack team of Ocean's 11 nerd kids were really just bilking the system for
eventually
everything.
We figured out that you could just open the boxes and pull the sensors out.
I mean, there's
and then
a
it was,
million
then
ways
was
to
fucking,
steal things, but sure, yeah. You criminal masterminds at
so I don't justify old. This, nor do I endorse
All
it.
Who was it?
It was
you fucking criminal. That is gross and egregious, and you are a fucking
but the truth
jerk.
Is, he was the only guy with any guts, because the rest of us
Don't
were like,
try to save
I'll
this.
Be the... No, this was me. I was like, I'll be the one who, like, pretends to set off the alarm.
Yeah.
Like, the fucking...
You,
there's no risk
you,
at all.
You, this is just for me, listeners. I'm so sorry. Can you show me the face you'd use when you accidentally set off the alarm?
Okay.
So you go through.
So I go through. That's so stupid. And I fucking...
For the listeners, Galen looked really confused and looked around like, what is happening? Me? I didn't do that. The alarm went off.
So anyway, that's... And I got another Evil Dead story. Real fast. I'm sorry. Real fast. I'm sorry, guys.
I'm going to check my phone. Go
this
ahead.
It's been a while and I'm just into
it.
Okay? I'm just fucking into it. The first time I ever watched the movie was when I was much younger, when I was probably in junior high. And by that time, I'd seen all sorts of movies, like Pulp Fiction and all those like violent movies. And my parents always allowed them. And for whatever reason, I rented Evil Dead from the store and I was watching it. And my mom came in and I, you know, maybe to your concern, eventually she felt like enough's enough. This yeah. kid has seen everything. He's seen too much. And I have to start being a parent.
Yeah.
So why she chose Evil Dead to parent me, I
After
don't know.
After all the ridiculous things that you saw.
Yeah. So she came in during the climax of the film and she said she was watching it and she was like, you can no longer watch this. But the concession, and I was like, what are you talking about? It's almost over. Like, let me finish the movie. She's like, no, close your eyes, cover your eyes, and I will describe to you the things that are happening on screen. And so I did. And she was like, okay, now the monsters are, their faces are exploding blood into his mouth. Now the monsters are turning into bugs. Like it was like
so
that.
Good.
And I was like, this is so dumb.
This is like someone who doesn't show up to school for 8 months acing their final exam. It's like she abdicated her responsibility to you as a mother for so long, letting you see the most terrible
well,
thing.
I just watched it later. Like Ugh. It was not like this.
I forgot you were a criminal hoodlum at this point.
No, this is
in
way
training.
Before that.
In some difference, I was driving today again, and my mom's like, what are you going to watch for the podcast? I said,
God, my mom's going to be so mad at me about that stealing story.
Yeah.
That's how I'm so smart, Mom. That's how I know a lot about movies.
Because you
That's how I got this career.
Yeah, by theft. Well, great. At least it's morally justified in everyone's mind now. So good job. My mom said, oh, you're watching Evil Dead. Oh, what is that? What is that? Have you ever seen that before? I said, yeah, in high school. She goes, you saw that in high school? And I don't think I knew about that. Oh. And I said, I think you probably knew about it. She's like, I said, do you know what it is? She goes, no, never heard of it. She goes, but it sounds
well, yes.
rated R and
it's
scary.
Can I also say, as a closer, it's a fucking amazing title. Yeah. And maybe that just all by itself is the fun quotient because it's ridiculous.
The Evil Dead.
Is
great.
Brilliant.
No, it's great.
In every possible way.
That's
that starts careers.
That's
people.
A good place to end. The Evil Dead is a brilliant title. We're going to see a brilliant film. Stand by.
Okay, let me think. It's a 7. What suit?
Diamonds. No, wait. Hearts.
Oh, my God, seven of hearts. You're right.
Hey, Ash, I guessed the card right.
Yeah, truly amazing, Linda.
I don't know, but I think it's really some sort of extra sense or something, you know, like ESP.
Okay, try this one.
Okay, it's a seven.
I don't believe it.
Of spades. Queen of spades. Four of hearts. Eight of spades. Two of spades. Jack of diamonds. Jack of clubs.
Disturbed our sleep, awakened us from our ancient slumber. You will die like the others before you. One by one, we will take you.
The We're back. Evil Dead.
We watched
The Evil Dead.
Although the trailer curiously calls it just Evil Dead.
Yeah, I think The Evil Dead's a better name.
I have a question.
That's how a lot of these back ends start.
Yeah.
I accept the challenge.
Well, it's a little bit of a leading question.
I have no doubt.
Do you want to start with the good or do you want to start with the bad?
I want to start with the bad.
Oh, okay.
I have a clear feeling about that.
Well, your confidence in that choice makes me want you to start with the bad.
Yeah, okay, great. Well, I mean, there's two reasons I want to do that. One, I want to kind of get it out the way. Mm. And discuss it. And two, I think it'll be more fun if we deal with it and then get to the fun. Because there's a lot of fun things to talk about in this film.
Let's
just open where the film opens. It was basically with tree rape.
I know. It comes right at you.
Kaylin asked me when this was happening, oh, is this the woman who gets tree raped? And I was like, nah. In my head, I was like, it can't be because it can't happen this soon.
Yeah, you're thinking it can't. The first horror sequence, extreme sequence, can't be the tree raping a girl.
Yeah, but it is. And also, I don't know if young...
Jesus Christ.
I don't know if young Travis didn't quite clock what was all going on or the implications of said thing. It's a lot more aggressive than I remember it being.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel the
same
way?
That's what I wanted to talk about.
Okay, well, that's where I'm at. We need to discuss
this. I have a lot to wrestle with.
Also, while we're in this conversation, let me just point out that there are... It's hard. I don't want to necessarily use this phrase, but like abuse porn, I guess. There's some scenes where Bruce Campbell's beating up. First of all, I should say the three women are the go first, leaving two men behind. And then
there are five people who go to this cabin.
Yeah.
One, there's an awkward fifth wheel woman who you way belatedly figure out is his sister. Did you know that before they were like,
they say she's your sister.
They say it like well after she's dead.
No, of course not. No one
never know who she is.
No, they don't tell you.
And so it's a strange batch until you realize they're creating female fodder.
Yes.
They wanted an extra woman to beat and destroy.
And it's there's the fact that the women go first. And then there's the fact that there are moments that are sequences where Bruce Campbell or the other guy, you know, attack women and it's played for laughs / horror.
Yeah. I don't know what this, I'm starting to question, you know, this is hard to explain if you're not me or Travis, but Travis and I are working on a story right now about the manipulation of reality around a given subjective point of view.
It's not going to work. This
no, it's not going to make any sense. Yeah. But there's something very strange to me about revisiting this. As if drawing the short straw decided to open this conversation for no other reason than it seems to be in the air about abuse of women. And I didn't remember Evil Dead other than this tree rape thing, which I thought for sure total anomaly, and probably if I'm being totally honest, I was sort of getting my ire up in the intro because I was thinking this is just going to be a thing.
I thought it was gonna be played for dumb laughs,
and I thought it would be essentially juvenile harmless, and the whole movie is about beating up and murdering your girlfriend or women in your vicinity.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what the movie's about for like 45 or 50 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's, and I was like, what the fuck? Like, how come we were talking about this? And then suddenly Evil Dead becomes about that. That's how it felt to me. It's like, we forced Evil Dead to become a movie about abusing women.
Yeah. We warped it into our reality.
Yes.
And there are moments where the last two people, so I know the guy basically lives, but his, Bruce Campbell's girlfriend turns into a, we'll get the plot in a second. We're basically doing it as we go. But the Bruce Campbell's girlfriend turns into like this zombie creature. And then the other guy is sitting kind of injured on the couch, and it is not a classic zombie in the way the other ones are. His girlfriend is the only one that turns into a mock. She's mocking him. She's got this like high pitched like voice that is like a mocking girlfriend trope that's happening. And then he holds a gun to her head and thinks about blowing her head off and then can't do it. And it gets really twisted from there.
I mean, that's like late in the game. Like,
no, I'm saying that sequence in terms of how he treats the girlfriend, because then he ends up having to like bludgeon and
he's the last guy who like doesn't want to hit the girl. Like that's his whole character arc for Ash is he doesn't want to hit the women because he's a good guy, but then they are so monstrous and aggressive and mocking that he has to start beating them mercilessly.
Yeah.
And that's the arc. He just has to. You got to go there now. So all of this said, I was thinking, watching the film, like it's a cool, it's always fascinating and always creative and always interesting to watch and fun to watch in a certain kind of filmmaking way. I was watching it for the first 45, 50 minutes being like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Like Evil Dead is bad. Evil, not necessarily bad in the way that like it's poorly made. It's certainly not poorly made. But I was like, this movie is kind of bleak and evil, and I kept willing myself to be like, but is this somehow in a Boondocks sense sort of way, is this somehow revealing the id of young men, violent young men, repressed nerdy young men? Like I was like looking for that, and then, and not to cut short the conversation about the negative elements of this movie, but it suddenly transforms into your good old friend Evil Dead.
I know the moment it happens too.
It's amazing.
It is crazy. Like I'm so happy you said that, because there's a moment where you go, oh, Sam Raimi.
Yeah.
Oh, Bruce Campbell.
And the movie discovers
itself. Yeah, the movie. Well, they discover it. Like you watch Bruce Campbell learn how to be Bruce Campbell in this movie.
Yeah.
Because they had to have shot some of this in sequence, because he starts off being ludicrously bad, in my opinion. Yeah. And then there's a moment, there's a fucking specific moment where I go, oh, Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell just figured out how to be Sam
the
Raimi.
Good, Bruce the good, if not miraculous thing about the movie, and the thing that, it makes it two movies, and it almost splits it. It's not quite in half, but it almost splits
like
the experience.
It's like the
in half.
Second act break, the last third of the movie.
Right,
is that,
the third
is,
act or whatever is your old pal, the Evil Dead, which becomes Evil Dead 2. And I was like watching this film, I was like, God, no fucking wonder they made Evil Dead 2, because they realized only that like in the last 25 or 30 minutes of this movie did they discover their magic,
all the rad shit.
And
they
so
did. Yeah.
And but it's I've all that said, by the end of the film, I was grateful for the entire film, because I don't know any movie that exists that I can at least think of right now that becomes itself becomes and you know, I tried initially to watch this from the point of view of a newbie, you know, who didn't know anything about Sam Raimi, Bruce Campbell, whatever. It's interesting on that level, but knowing who those guys are now that we've defined who they are, and we've even seen them grow into like soggy middle age, if not late middle age, it's like the guys who became such a force in Evil Dead 2 and in, you know, everything they did afterward, and the movie reveals it. It's a fucking late in the game introduction. They aren't themselves coming out of the gate.
No.
It finally gets there.
It that's what makes it beautiful. I mean, there's a couple more bad things that we have to say.
Yeah.
But no. Let's not cut off the bad part of the conversation. But I will say, you know what? Here's a good segue out of it, because I think this is half and half what I'm about to say. It's almost like a bunch of guys got together and said, we're going to do, like Kalen said earlier, Night of the Living Dead, right?
Yeah.
They're going to do Texas this
Chainsaw,
thing. Texas, like, yeah, straight up, you know, horror, but we're really creative and we're fun. And there's moments of really great filmmaking in the intro to this. And I don't ever want to excuse, you know, violence against women in any sort of way, but it's almost like they're like, let's just do the thing, the movie that everybody does, and we'll do it our way and make it creative and fun. And so they start to do this. And it's
kind of horrifying, like Kaelin's talking about. There's a lot of weird violence and things, and the ideas are certainly their own, but also certainly pulling from a wellspring of horror tropes that right. they're working with. And then they find a way to bust out of that in the third act.
You know what's really weird? What it felt like to me, curiously enough, because when the movie becomes itself, it becomes totally unhinged and
awesome,
just awesome, yeah, awesome,
awesome.
But watching the film, I actually thought it projected somehow the experience of moving from kind of a stupid jerk of a young guy into a mature version of someone who either has moved into a new realm or moved beyond their rage toward women or something. Like it finds a maturation in a funny way. It matures into itself. And as it matures into itself, it drops all the ugliness of your average young man, your average man.
I think it's supposed to be, oh shit, oh, like that's the reaction I think that the movie wants me to have in the second act.
But it, you can't deny it, whether it knows it or not, its first hour or so is thematically about the repressed feeling of wanting to hurt a woman.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
By the time it gets to it, the Evil Dead, the part that you like love and
remember, the part honestly you remember. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. It stops. It's not about that anymore, because by then the guy, like, it's just Bruce Campbell by himself fighting whatever monsters around, which happens, one is a woman, one's a guy, like they're all violent monsters, they're all going crazy,
which is fine.
And it's him getting in, there's blood splattering on light bulbs and on film projectors, and he's making hilarious faces, and it's like it just stops having any thematic resonance at all and yeah. becomes an awesome stylistic exercise.
Do you agree with what I'm saying in terms of what the movie, the what they want the audience to do there?
You mean in the end or in the
beginning? No, in the first and second act. Like, am I reading what their desire for their experience to be? Am I reading it correctly, do you think?
There was a time, I would say, where, and this is being honest, I'm trying to be honest. You know, the people that I liked.
Be honest, please.
The artists that I liked, I used to sort of court the idea of misogyny.
Uh-huh.
I was interested in it as a young man, as a like 15-year-old guy. I was like, I would listen to, you know, Elvis Costello I can't think of any examples right now, but I used to think, like, you know, there's something that was being romanticized about being a angry young man, and part of that involved being angry toward women. And I didn't exhibit any anger toward women, but I remember the feeling of that being attractive or a definable role or something. Sure. And eventually that goes away. But I am so far, I feel now so genuinely far away from it that watching the film, I felt like I understood who would like it, but I don't remember how they like it. I don't remember how to like a movie like this that is mean like that.
Right.
And so I don't know the answer to your question. I don't really know what a, you know, angry young 19-year-old or 18-year-old or 20-year-old gets out of the film.
Part. I contend that the angry 18 or 19-year-old male is not necessarily dialed into the things that we're talking about. They think, my supposition is that it's supposed to be funny and crazy and awesome. I think
you might be right. I just don't. I don't have an analysis of it because I'm not trying to like over present here. I was really crushed that I wasn't liking the movie
mm-hmm.
for quite a while, or for a period. Let's say the beginning, I liked it. When they started starting with the tree,
happens again, guys, very quickly.
It's maybe 15, 14.
It's the first crazy thing that happens.
Yeah, and I was like, oh. Yeah, that's not fun to watch. And then I was like, wait, the whole movie's like this? Like, the whole movie's them beating women with crowbars and stuff?
I was really
like,
surprised by that. Jesus. And just to clarify this tree thing one more time, because here's my experience.
It's gleeful in it.
Here's the moment. I can point to a moment that really exemplifies it. So she's attacked by these trees. This woman is running off into the woods. I mean, a questionable decision. She runs into the woods. And the trees, the branches wrap around her and hold her arms down and hold her legs down. And you're kind of like, this is weird. The sense, this is really strange.
You know
and
what's then, the problem with this? Go ahead. Well, but I know the problem with this.
Let me point to the moment where I think for me, I was like, holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
It rips her clothes And then there's this close-up shot of her holding her hand over her breast. And the tree puts its branch on her wrist and pulls her hand away, sort of exposing her. And I was like, oh no, like that's when everything went wrong for me. And then it gets worse from there, but there's a intentional moment of the tree sexualizing her for the audience's pleasure.
You are, like. No, this is what I was going to say. One of the things that we all remember about the Evil Dead, and this is coming after Halloween. So I want to argue that this is innocently intended as just another creative choice. But we all know the shot of you are the monster point of view running through the woods toward the cabin or toward the characters or whatever. It's they repeat it over and over again in Evil Dead. It's awesome. It's awesome to be a part of an unknowable evil entity. You have the point of view of an unknowable evil entity that you don't even get to see until Evil Dead 2 when you kind of see it in a crazy way. The biggest problem with this movie in terms of its what Travis is talking about, you are the monster raping the girl. Mm-hmm. That's the point of view you get. You are not in the point of view of the girl feeling scared. You are the aggressor. And you are rooted in not just the monster's point of view, but you're more rooted. You're clearly the protagonists of the movie are the two men.
Yeah.
And you're in that their shot.
She's covering her breast from the camera and then it's removed for the camera.
But even, camera. But they've established this as a stylistic thing. So it's not like, I think I'm going to give it the greatest benefit of the doubt here and say they kind of bumbled into this situation.
I think you're right. I think that's exactly right. I think it is monster POV the whole time.
Yeah.
But the experience of watching it is like, oh no.
Yeah. And it immediately, that shot is very ugly and it immediately follows it with what is a joke. I guess it means it as a joke where the tree pulls her legs apart and drives a branch right into
it. I don't think it's a joke and I don't think it's horror. I think it's supposed to be, oh, I really think that's the reaction they're going for. And I've been wrestling with like what they think it's supposed to be. Is it supposed to be scary? It's not really scary. Is it supposed to be funny? It's not really cut as a comedy thing.
Right.
It's cut as like a, I can't believe they did that. What a crazy choice thing. So I think that's what they're going for.
Which is Toxic Avenger. I mean, you know, this is, it's Toxic Avenger amazingly doesn't have this level of cruelty.
Yeah.
But again, I don't think that they really meant to be cruel. They meant to be crazy. You may be right.
I think it's supposed to be crazy. And I think there's tropes existent in the culture at this time and in the horror movie world they're playing with.
Yes, but it's also farther. I felt, and I could be wrong, of course I could be wrong, but I felt that this was coming from an unconscious place, is that they concocted this nothing of a story, which we'll tell you right in a moment, because it was coming from a place of honesty. I feel this way.
It's hard to separate that out. We've talked about this before on the podcast, but I think it bears repeating.
And I don't want to.
No. Yeah. I was going to say something I've already said on the podcast, but there's a reason that cutting a woman in half in magic became so popular around the time period it did. It was very concurrent with the woman's suffrage movement.
Right.
And the magicians became very interested. The guy who invented it was a guy, and men liked to go see women get killed on stage, and it was a thing. And it was you know, not necessarily conscious on every magician's part. Certainly, people did it because it was a cool trick, but it's always a man cutting a woman in half,
right?
And that was very much intended as a violence against women on a public stage thing. And you look back on it and you go, oh, now I totally get it. At the time, a lot of people didn't think about it, and I would contend that I think the guy who invented it was probably clear to it. A lot of magicians who performed it and did different things with it weren't even on a subconscious level tuned into what that was supposed to be. They thought, oh, there's a trick everybody does, and I can make it better. I don't know that Sam Raimi was unconsciously expressing violence against women. It's entirely possible, and given the film we just saw, certainly. But there's so much around at the time period they made this that is this, and if you just double down on what's already there, you get something nasty like this.
Right.
So it could have happened either way. Both ways, it's gross. Both ways, it's not cool and certainly disturbing to watch, especially given this amount of time that's passed.
Well, regardless of what the intent was, it's kind of, I think that they don't know what they're portraying necessarily. Yeah, and the movie does feel, and that doesn't excuse it, actually, but it doesn't feel like the movie's in control of its ugliness. It's just sort of like, I don't know. This is a thing. Like, this is a crazy thing. And so I should back away from that. Whether it's coming from a personal point of view place or just from a place of trying to replicate what they're seeing around them. You know, it's an unfortunate
and doing crazier things.
So here's the story. You know it. We all know it. A group of five 20-ish year olds.
Early 20s. Two couples and Bruce Campbell's sister.
Turns out, Bruce Campbell's sister. they go, they're going to the woods for a little vacation, and they go to a cabin, and the cabin has a tape recorder in the cellar, and they bring that tape recorder up, and they play it, and on the tape recorder is an old professor guy who, you know, retreated to this cabin and said that he'd been researching ancient whatever, and
ancient Sumerian burial practices.
Okay, and he found this book, which I don't know if he says in the thing, it's the Book of the Dead.
He does say that, but doesn't say Necronomicon.
Okay, he so says it's a Book of the Dead. Phrase, yeah. And then he reads some incantations which call back the evil, which, as far as I can tell, is already there. So
it's for sure.
He's just calling, they accidentally wake it up again. I guess it's already kind of awake, and they kind of wake it up again, and then it runs rampant.
It's double woke.
Yeah, and so then a bunch of crazy, cool, gross horror stuff happens.
I would say, just in terms of the shooting of the stuff, I loved every shot selection. Every time there's a choice, Sam Raimi goes for like the weird, interesting choice, and there's just constantly cool angles and cool, neat ideas in it. And the way,
you know,
shot
what was what was amazing to me about that is watching the movie. It felt like something made on like digital video. Not because it looked bad, but because it felt like the camera was so completely unmoored. You could literally do anything and go anywhere. Felt like it was the size of a fucking
from the beginning. There's a follow shot as the car approaches the cabin, which is clearly shot from a truck behind it, whatever. But it's so smooth, it almost feels like a drone shot.
Well, it's like, smooth, but it's also hella raw. I mean, like, it's the when I say digital video, I kind of mean like, you know, like DSLRs or like camera phones or something, because it's all shaky. Like there's no stability on it, and it just looks fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Always, like all these crazy, super creative shots of packed in the corners and under floorboards and above the ceilings and stuff. It's like not well, they don't care. Of course they don't care, nor do they have the time, nor would it help the aesthetic to have it look better. Yeah. It looks like they're barely squeezing into something.
It looks, it does all the
time.
And
I love that.
There's this, I mentioned this before on the podcast too, but I think it bears mentioning again, that David Mitchell has this thing where David Mitchell's a writer, Cloud Atlas, etc. He goes through, allegedly, according to him, and grades every metaphor on a scale of 1 to 5. 1 is everyone uses it. 2 is I've seen it a couple times. 3 sometimes. 5 is like never seen this before at all. And goes through
His own metaphors?
Of his own books, yeah. And then if anything has a 1, 2, or a 3 by it, he crosses that out, doesn't replace it with anything, just cuts it. And so that's how he gets away with using less metaphor and stuff. But the only things that show up in his books are things you've never seen before. You're like, oh, that's a fucking crazy idea. Mm-hmm. And his books are loaded with them because he cuts the other stuff. And it felt like this too. They're like, okay, we have to do an approach shot for the car coming to the cabin. This is a shot we've seen 5,000 times. How do we do it differently?
Right.
Oh, frame it from behind this thing. Oh, that's a great idea. And every shot feels that way.
Well, and when I was saying earlier during the intro, you know, that this movie was particularly fun for somebody who wanted to make movies. True enough, but you know what? I was watching this movie and I was feeling sort of a theory coming on.
Oh no, here we go.
That anybody taps into this energy. You know, like I think that like Francois Truffaut or somebody said, like a good movie is at one part of a good movie, any good film is that it is the story of its own creation. It's the story of its own self being made, kind of.
How many movies of his did you steal?
A number of them.
There you go.
I could tell you. Can I tell you one thing that's so funny? The ultimate movie example of this is Truffaut's Day for Night, right? And so, which is a movie about making movies. And by this time, there was a new DVD of Day for Night at Borders, and I was like, "But we'd been fucking pushing it, okay? By this time, we'd been pushing it.
Yeah. You stole and it, I knew, taking it all off.
And
too.
there was a man who worked at Borders who we called Tiny Guy. Because he was really little. Worked there. And I could feel him. He had been eyeballing us a couple of times. And he kind of knew we were up to something. So here's my idea. I want Day
These
for Night.
These kids who set off the alarm every time they
asshole.
Come in.
I'm such a fucking asshole. Well, by this time we'd avoided the whole alarm thing.
Right.
But I'm such an asshole, man. I knew he wanted us. He wanted to bust us. I get it. He wanted to get us. Because he knew we were fucking stealing stuff. So I knew that as the thief, and I thought, I'm going to buy this one. but I'm going to buy it subtly when Tiny Guy's not looking. Then I'm going to go to a part of the store and start to open it. Just to, not just to fuck with him, but I thought this would throw off the scent.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, yeah.
So he, sure enough, I opened day for night, right, like being like egregious, like I would never actually do if I were stealing something, but I'm fucking do it. He comes right over and he goes, "Sir, may I see your receipt?" And I was like, "Yes." And I gave it to him and his fucking world melted.
Oh, that's great.
And I did, and then I like, you know, but I like, it was so effective.
Yeah, that's good. No, it's a good double cross.
And I feel guilty about it to this day. Poor tiny guy.
Well, also, your chicanery and thievery put him out of a job because you wrecked borders.
Eventually, I closed borders.
Yeah, good job. All right. So the every movie is a story of its own making.
So this film, I think that horror and sort of low budget filmmaking in particular appeals to everybody on that level. I think anybody watching this feels connected to the experience of creating it because it's so egregious. It's so nakedly part of the film is people throwing cameras around, being fun, being friends. You don't have to want to make movies to tap into that. And I feel like I felt watching this film. I don't know if I'll feel this way about another movie or whatever. The appeal of like your average like drive-in customer or whatever in the era where these are like movies of the people in a funny way. And I felt objective about that watching this movie suddenly where it's like, if I never fucking liked movies, I would love this movie.
Yeah. Well, in this movie, the creativity is more accessible than a lot of films.
Yeah. It's because it's just
anyone
constant.
Can understand why it's cool. Like, why is that shot cool? Why is that? I mean, listen, the third act when things are gory and awesome and crazy, everyone gets why it's great ideas.
Yes.
Because it just becomes ideas after a while.
That's really right. It's so broadly creative that everybody you fall in love with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it requires no knowledge of anything to understand why
this
is so creative.
If you've seen one movie in your life, you know that this movie is crazily different or like wildly.
Yeah. It feels different. Here's a question for you. For me, it was a very stark moment. Was there a moment for you when you're like, oh, we're now in Sam Raimi, Bruce Campbell town?
Yeah. I wish I could remember exactly what it was.
Do you know roughly where it was?
Well, it's just before it's when he's alone. It's just before he goes into the cellar. I mean, something happens, and I don't know.
Well, they do I think this is the one I'm talking about. Right before he goes in the cellar, there's a shot that starts out behind his head, goes up over his head, and comes into that famous Bruce Campbell close-up where his eyes are all twitchy. And I was like, here we are.
Yeah, absolutely. It's probably the same, the same moment.
And then, from then on, it really is Evil Dead 2. It's really...
It's amazing. It's really crazy. He looks different. Maybe he literally had by this point. He looks like he's aged. He looks like he's become. He's like a little weird unibrow kid.
Yeah.
And then
Who doesn't know how to act? No, or say words.
And who doesn't? And they don't have a handle on the performance tone in this film at all until he's by himself.
Yeah.
And then it's clearly like, good. All those other weirdos are away. They're not actually in this movie anymore. We've cast fucking Ivan Raimi to be all the bad guys. Like, it's just crazy. It's just them, like, our crew is back or in place for the first time, and they become who they are. That's like this dream team of horror creative filmmaking. The other thing that I thought about Bruce Campbell watching this movie, I was watching Blade Runner. We watched Blade Runner 2, 2049. We watched it, and I was watching that movie thinking, and it was the first time in a long time that I was like, man, I just love the way Harrison Ford moves, especially when he fights. Mm-hmm. Harrison Ford in action is unlike any other actor in action. He's kind of bad at action. He's very slow. Mm-hmm. But his slowness is iconic. He's almost posing with his slowness. Mm-hmm. And I don't think this is intentional necessarily, but it's completely familiar. And suddenly when that happened, Bruce Campbell started moving like Bruce Campbell.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's the fucking guy. Like, I didn't realize how iconic his movements were saw him become himself.
No, I agree. And I also think the camera finds its way to him in a different way also. Like, the camera movements start to change too. So it's not just Bruce Campbell moving differently. It's that the camera around him is really like, oh, I recognize these movements now.
They start playing with sped up motion. Like they start fucking around with the stylistic of filmmaking.
The record player is very Sam Raimi.
Well, it's literally stop motion. But I mean, like, there's a part where he's bumbling through the house, and they've cranked it up, and it just looks like Evil Dead 2 all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, that's a different feeling movie. Yeah. This just became that movie,
like, which is great. And yeah, I was very happy to be there because I was so okay, at least everyone's dead. There's no more women abuse. Fine. Like, there's some crazy decisions too, just on the woman beat. At one point, he's told he has to dismember everybody to survive. Doesn't really happen. It's a thing that kind of goes away. And then he takes his girlfriend down.
They amusingly, or not amusingly, threaten with a chainsaw.
Well, that's what I'm about to say. He takes his girlfriend down to the basement and chains her up, starts a chainsaw. And in case you don't understand, the voiceover of the film is him remembering, like, gotta, you know, separate the limbs from the bodies, and he holds it up, and weirdly, or not weirdly, the girlfriend's zombie makeup has gone away, and she's just this beautiful woman who's laying there and it's chained down, and he can't do it, and he carries her up, and it just underscores what happens next, which is he beats the shit out of her.
I know.
It's such a weird thing to humanize her only in service of, I assume, humanizing Bruce Campbell, I guess is the idea.
Be, yeah. Right.
But you unintentionally humanize this girl you're about to destroy with, like, you know, a big metal plank that you're just smacking.
Yeah, yeah. It's
Sorry to go back to the woman thing.
Yeah, I know.
Sorry, I ruined it.
Is there any more to say about that?
No, we should have.
Let's move on.
No, I shouldn't have gone back to it. But that was especially like, what, Bruce Campbell? What are you doing? Also, I will say, there's moments at the start of the film when things are going wrong, and they haven't given Bruce Campbell something to do, so they have him holding like an axe and staying in the background. The craziest shit in the world happening. There's a person being possessed by a fucking spirit, and they're floating, and they're writhing on the floor, and, you know, all kind of crazy things are happening. And Bruce Campbell's in the background of the shot, just kind of like standing there, not being told what to do by any director, I feel like.
Yeah. You see, let's talk very briefly about the other guy in the movie, because his name is Scott, the character.
Of course it is.
And he is, I commented early on, like, is it an achievement how much I hate this guy? Because
I think it's a failure, actually.
Do you?
I do.
Do you think it's a mistake?
I know what you're saying. I think it's a failure.
So what I thought was, again, this is a sort of benefit of the doubt for a movie that I wanted to love so bad. At this point, he is, mean. He's not funny. He's annoying looking,
The most unlikable person.
I've almost never seen a more unlikable character in my entire life.
I agree,
and I'm sort of like, why? But he's friends with Bruce Campbell. I don't think you're supposed to hate him. He's like,
that's why I think it's a mistake. Here's the thing: every horror movie of this type of specific genre needs the agitator ringleader guy. It's like, we're going to the cabin, and yeah, we're gonna stay here all night, even if there's crazy shit happening. And fuck it, you guys are scared. You need that.
But he's
agitator.
Eventually a bad. The reason I'm bringing that up is because he's eventually a bad guy when he's like, forget your. She's your girlfriend.
But
I'm
that
leaving.
Guy always ends up being that guy. To me, the failure is not making him an impulsive agitator character, which is all he needs to be for the film to work.
Right.
They make him a fucking, you hate him, and you don't understand why anyone's friends
with
him.
And everyone else likes
him. Exactly. Right, and it makes you question everyone else. Because at a certain, within 10 minutes, you're like, well, you guys went to a cabin with the fucking psychopath. It's your own fault. He sucks.
Yeah.
And you don't like his girlfriend, and you don't like Bruce Campbell for even subjecting his own girlfriend to that guy.
Yeah.
And he brought his little sister with him?
Yeah.
Fuck you, Bruce Campbell. This guy's a psychopath. Like, it doesn't, I think
but
it's a huge
the thing
mistake.
Is he's not, it would be, fun if he was a psychopath. He's just an asshole.
Yeah, he's just a real
jerk. He's a
jerk.
Fucking asshole.
Yeah.
And it's like, who would be friends with this super asshole?
Yeah.
Nobody.
He's unpleasant, and I think it's a mistake. I don't think it's a success or
you're convincing
a
me.
Virtue. I just think they fucked up. Because you can do all the things the movie needs to do with a more likable, just, you know, buffoon guy who's just impulsive and wants to have a good time at all costs.
Well, which is one of the mistakes that it kind of corrects when they get to Evil Dead 2. The guy that they put into that position, who they sort of pipe into the story, is some yokel redneck who's fine. Mm. He's kind of scared. He's kind of annoying, but he's comic relief. He's a goofball, and you kind of like him.
Yeah.
And so he fully displaces and replaces this guy.
This is a huge mistake.
So
I mean, he probably never.
They learned
before.
All these lessons. It's very so. Maybe based on that alone, you can say, okay, they acknowledged their mistake.
I think so. No, I think this is a great movie to watch, especially for a podcast like this, because some of the mistakes that we've talked about are kind of glaring and feel dated and feel like mistakes. But some of the things are so creative, and you get to watch artists becoming artists. Like
right.
you get to watch Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell become themselves and find themselves, and you see it happen. And it's really remarkable. And I didn't expect to see that. It's also the movie. I don't know if they coined the phrase, but it's where I learned the phrase fake shimps. Is this their
I would
coin?
Have to assume they made it
I
up.
Think so too. But there are like 30.
Yeah, they listed a million of them.
Which
makes well, now we didn't say this in the intro, but like the story of the making of this is that it was pretty hard to make, right? Yeah, like it was pretty miserable.
Well, I think some of the crew and cast had to sleep in that cabin, is what I remember. Mm. And just hated each other. Also, I had forgotten how much fake blood is in this movie. And it's fucking great. And it's comical and nuts. But also, that would be so uncomfortable as an actor to do.
Let me ask you this question. When does Sam Raimi realize he has this aesthetic? Let's just pretend. I don't know the answer to this. So let's just guess, because that'll be fun.
You mean the whole film or the last third?
When does he realize that he has what his powers are? Like at a certain point, the movie seems to fully discover itself. It knows suddenly how to use bad stop motion, mm-hmm. which becomes a staple of his. It knows how to use gore. Mm-hmm. It knows how to use sound design. It knows how to use sort of unexpected splashes of blood. Like, it does all these really incredible things that it's been kind of toying with all along. So did he like fucking watch all his dailies
two things. One is, I think, yes, he grows over the course of making the film and you see it. But two, his specific skill set suits the third act of the film, which is Bruce Campbell being gross with monsters.
Right.
There's not as many opportunities for that in the first and second acts of the film. So I think it's both those things. He discovers his powers and sort of figures out what he's doing. But also his specific skill set, at least at this time in history, however old he is like perfectly tuned to the third act. He's good at gore and crazy ideas and funny stuff. And like, it's just wacky. And there's not as much opportunity for that in the beginning, I think.
Because it's playing on tropes. Because it's trying to be
more... Well,
it's
setting up the third act.
Well, I guess so. You could say that charitably. But it's trying to be
a
relatively regular movie. I mean, you said this even at the beginning. It does these fake outs. Like there's in the very beginning of the film, they drive past some rednecks and they honk and the rednecks kind of wave at them. And it's supposed to Texas Chainsaw freak you out, I think. You're supposed to be like, ooh, they're out in the woods Deliverance style with some fucking yokels who are just on the side of the road being weird. Like, and then there's another part where you see a tattered poster for The Hills Have Eyes. Mm-hmm. And like, this movie ultimately has nothing to do with that stuff. It actually isn't even in the tradition of that stuff. I mean, they finally discover they're Three Stooges people, like Three Stooges with blood, like, and monsters. That's what they are. They're not even coming out of the world of Friday the 13th or Toby Hooper or like whatever.
It's almost funny because the setup of the film, as Kaelin said, but just to remind you, is this Sumerian researcher has gotten this Necronomicon. Mm. And he's gone. He's the
those are the parts in the early going where it feels right.
Right. Well, hold on.
Yeah.
The world is too crazy for them. So him and his wife go seclude themselves in this cabin in the woods in order to further study these archetypes and these books that they've gotten, these things. And they've hung up a poster of The Hills Have Eyes.
Yeah, right.
Which, if you think about that for a second, really is confusing. So it's right. Even that's, I'm saying, is a mishmash of just styles and ideas just kind of thrown about. And I thought the setup of this movie is awesome. I think the idea of having a tape of a guy who had a book and like,
well,
it's awesome.
these guys love old movies. And so, you know, that they're kind of doing like, you know, The Mummy mm-hmm. or something. Mm-hmm. Like they're doing that's where they're riffing on. And so ultimately, when you look at this as a whole, the parts that are not that fun to watch or not that good are the parts that are like any other horror movie from the 70s or early 80s.
Yeah.
And those are the parts that they shouldn't be referencing because they aren't – that's – of course they can do that because any fucking idiot can do that. But they're so much better than that and their references are so much deeper than that.
Yeah.
And more personal. Like, when they get personal, that's when it gets good.
Yeah. Here's the thing. The more space they have to be creative, the better the movie gets. And the third act is just, Bruce Campbell tries to escape from these monsters. That's the plot of the entire third act. Because that's such a wide swath of land to work from, it's better because there's more creativity to be had. There's some plot requirements and character things you got to do in the setup. There's some of that stuff you have to do in the second act.
But the third act one is just like, okay, cool. Now he just plays with monsters for for 20 minutes. It's fucking great.
Right, it's so great. It is great.
I say watch it.
Yeah, watch it. Watch it knowing that there's that it gets you somewhere. You know, I mean, like,
and we acknowledge fully the problems it has.
With and it's just misogyny. Fucking unfortunately stuck in a certain kind of 80s. Like the 80s, 80s are really a rough time.
I wrestle with, and this will come up with this again, come up against this again. I wrestle with how much responsibility these guys need to take. And I think this is a very sort of minefield territory. But you look at the time period when everyone's acting this way. And I'm not talking about actual misogyny, Harvey Weinstein style. That's a poorly phrased. I'm not talking about actual sexual violence. I'm talking about the depiction of sexual violence in a glorified way.
Right.
It's troubling. It's problematic to see, and it makes your stomach hurt, I think, to watch it. And I wrestle with how much should they have known? Like I wrestle with that thought.
I hear you. I think that's a good question. I still watch everything we said aside. I still watch this movie and I feel like it is an unfortunately revealing product of its time more so than I feel. I mean, look, they were young, but that I feel that they owe us any explanation or apology is like, you know, you respond to the world you're in. I mean, at even unconscious journalism, even ugly unconscious journalism is nevertheless valuable. I mean, there's something here that is telling.
Mm-hmm.
You just are very appreciative when they stop telling you that stuff.
It's not Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah.
But it's probably.
And I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I know I implied this earlier that maybe there's something loaded into young men and that's what's getting projected out here. But I would really like it if the truth here was...
They didn't think it through.
They didn't think it through, and they were just making a thing. And they thought they were doing what everybody else was doing.
I for sure had dumb ideas when I was 17, 18, 19, 20 that in retrospect were misogynistic because I didn't know any better. I'm sure I did. Of course I did.
Right.
So, you know, I was just luckily not very successful at that age, and people don't have a record of it.
Yeah, exactly. How do you think they feel about it now, Evil Dead 1?
I wonder if they've gone back and rewatched it.
Mm-hmm.
I bet
have a commentary.
I'd be interested in that. How long ago was the commentary?
Oh, I don't know.
I'd be interested in that. I wonder if when they... I'd specifically like to watch some of the problematic scenes of the commentary and see what they say.
Right.
Maybe we'll report back on that.
That'd be funny.
Because I am curious about that.
By the way, to close the loop on a story I began in the intro, I opened up my Book of the Dead, Evil Dead DVD, and discovered, to bring two stories together... Bruce Campbell had signed it. Mm-hmm. I took it to that screening that I mentioned where he was doing a Q&A.
He signed the stolen goods from Borders. Signed
my stolen Evil Dead.
Yeah, that makes sense. Ash, by the way, short for Ashley, which we had both kind of forgotten.
Is there something to that being a feminized name?
I don't want to deal with it.
Who cares?
Don't want to get into it.
Let's pick another movie.
Let's get into that.
Here we go.
Let's do one that has no gender. The gender
issues.
Hey,
all right. Let's have a real quick conversation.
Yeah,
here.
About how we're doing.
What
this.
Are we doing?
Yeah, I think here's what I think. I think because we haven't pre-showed this, I think we draw one now. I think for our last 25 or whatever episodes, we should do a shortened bag with maybe like 50 awesome, fun for the podcast movies. And we draw from that. This bag is too big. We've realized that.
Yes.
I give you two vetoes if you want to use them.
Two vetoes.
But here's what happens.
I like that.
But here's what's happening. If you veto the first and veto the second, you are stuck with that.
You're stuck with the third, no matter what it is.
And no drawing three and picking one.
No, I get it.
You understand the rules.
I totally get it. I'm picking one right now. Right. Let's see if we want to watch.
Wait, first say yes or no before you read it. You say yes or no before you
I
read
know.
It.
I can't, even if I wanted to say no, we're doing it. And I do kind of, but we have to do it.
Is this Goonies?
Next week on Does Your Favorite Movie Suck, Travis and I will be watching, Doc Hollywood.
Oh boy, I got stories. I got stories. This is going to be a 2-hour episode.
How
guys.
Do you even tease what's going to happen next
you
episode?
You guys, get ready to have your fucking heads blown off next week's
you gotta
episode.
You've got to bring evidence.
I can listen. I got tons of evidence. All right. See you next week.
Bye. On Does Your Favorite Movie Suck? Bye.